Hello and welcome to the third very special mini episode of the Book Wars Pod. This time focusing on our analysis of The Last Jedi. I'm Kate and I'm here with Chris and Kristen, and we're going to be finally just diving into pulling this movie apart in a, what I'm sure will be a very orderly and scholarly and not screamy way in the slightest.
That seems unlikely.
Okay, before we get into that, what are we all drinking? Kristen?
I want to hear your wine story.
Oh, okay. So, I am drinking the same rosé that I was drinking whenever the fuck we last recorded, which was literally, what?
Before? So many weeks ago.
Christmas? Like, several weeks ago, and I still have most of this bottle left, and so I'm drinking swill wine because I'm a disgusting person.
That sounds gross, Kate.
Wait, I'm gonna see how disgusting it is. You talk amongst yourselves.
Okay. It's, what do you?
It doesn't look good.
What are you drinking, Chris?
I can deal with this.
I am drinking Star Hill Snowblind Doppelbock, which is
Doppelbock
this time as well, and it's the last one in the fridge.
Yum! You guys are so good with your drinking slowly.
It's crazy well, stuff. You're also out of town for a week and a half.
Yeah. Well, it's never stopped me before. Hold on.
We're not out of town for a week and a half.
You're vaguely out of town.
We were with family for a week and a half. Not a week and a half.
So we should have been drinking more.
Well, yeah, but not your own alcohol.
I mean, that is a thing we did. Let them buy us alcohol, that is.
Oh, come on. I'm trying to get the cork out of this. Oh, there we go. Mazel tov.
That was a satisfying noise.
Yeah, it is. It really is a satisfying noise. Quinn is doing a dry January, so I'm drinking Belgian because he doesn't like it.
There you go. The real way to participate.
I know, I'm in full support of him, but I was like, I'm not going to do it. Belgian style plus Miranda at Real Baby Bird is coming into town in like 2 weeks, so that would never work. I've had this on the pod before, but not recently. Freem Belgian style blonde ale. It comes in at like 7.5. It's supposed to be enjoyed at like room temp, but I absolutely won't do that. I like it cold. Well, it's supposed to be like between 45 and 50. But it says sip of Freem Belgian style blonde ale begins with notes of pear and cloves before segueing into clean maltiness and ending with just enough bitterness to make you yearn for that first sip again, which is totally true. This is probably my favorite. Well, they make a strong blonde that's even more boozy than this, which I also really like, but the Belgian style blonde is delicious. So I just poured that. I'll try to make Quinn take a photo of me if I can.
But are you lying on the couch?
Oh, that's so good. I know. I'm lying on the couch. I'm covered in cords. And I'm drinking. Great. Speaking of unlistenable, unenthusiastic, and boring, who wants to start the first topic on the outline? General screaming.
Of course I'm doing general screaming. No. I just made a lot of hand-flapping motions at Chris to ask him to let me lead this episode discussion, which we may or may not regret, so let's do it. So, first of all, let's just get this out of the way. We're not a review podcast, but, you know, we can't help but talk about these things. What did we like in The Last Jedi? What didn't we like? Go.
How many times did you guys see it?
Twice.
Only twice so far, which I'm hoping to remedy this weekend.
Yeah, I need to go see it again, too. I might wait for Miranda to go see it a third time, but I might go see it this weekend.
Nice.
Again. Nice. Yeah, I only saw it once, which is really just not enough for...
That is definitely not enough.
Yeah. For, well, I just mean like, I guess that's my way of saying it's, this movie's really dense.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on.
I mean, I needed, I needed the first viewing to, for it to, you know, rip all my expectations to shreds, and then the second one to go into it.
I was to actually open. Watch it, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It kind of felt like Rogue One-y more than The Force Awakens to me, just it, like from a viewing experience standpoint. Like, it was just a lot of new and interesting and unexpected stuff at once.
Mm-hmm.
What did interesting. You guys think?
For me, I don't know that it felt like Rogue One. It definitely didn't feel like Force Awakens either, because Force Awakens, I mean, it's Star Wars. It felt the way it was intended to feel.
It was derivative and boring, Chris. No, I'm totally kidding.
No, it wasn't. I know you're kidding, totally but like kidding. It wasn't. But it was intended to, in like its stated goal was to invoke nostalgia, and yep. It accomplished that with flying colors. This I felt like Last Jedi was completely different from anything we've had in Star Wars before, which yeah. I feel like is why a few people haven't liked it. I got halfway through the movie and like thought to myself, like panicked, like, do I hate this movie? Like, I got to the throne. This is a spoiler podcast, right?
Oh yeah, we're doing all. The
I mean, we're okay. talking about The Last Jedi, so I think we I get assumed. To talk about yeah. The Last.
Like,
Jedi.
We got to the throne room scene, and basically right up until Kylo kills Snoke, I was like, do I hate this movie? because it just like it completely just destroys all your expectations, like, and that's hard, right? Like, that's like traumatizing, seems like a dramatic overreaction. Oh, but it is hard to switch your thinking on a dime from what, even if you've tried to go in without expectations, to from what you expected or what you thought might happen to what actually did happen, which I think was completely unexpected to a lot of people. Go ahead.
No, I just want to say that it was really great when we went to see this movie, because I just look over at Chris at certain parts of the movie and he was just like eating his hands. It was like in anxiety.
It is the most stress. I was so stressed out watching this movie and, the first time. And the second time too, but really the first time. I was like, even, I feel bad for the person next to me, because I was just like, no. Like when the TIE fighters blow out the bridge of the Raddus, I was like, no.
Yep.
Yep. Oh my god.
Like at the end when Luke's about to die, I'm like, no.
I mean, at least you did that quietly. When I thought Rose had died on Crait, I was actually saying no quite loudly in the theater. I'm pretty sure everyone was mad at me. I also want to add that while we were lining up to wait to be actually let into the actual theater, we were standing in a line, and Chris is literally, I'm standing there and I'm reading from a certain point of view because that's the book we were on at the time and I needed to distract myself. Whereas Chris is, so we're standing in a very wide hallway and Chris is like over there, like or yonder on the other side of the hallway, pacing and looking like a fucking insane person.
Yeah, I was like, I was very stressed out going into this movie. It was funny. I don't know why, I just really was. So, but no, so
was I mean, I was going into The Force Awakens as well.
I mean, oh, see, I wasn't going to Force Awakens.
Oh my god, I was.
Because I don't want to say one of those people, because I don't think this is necessarily like a common thing.
It can't get any worse.
No, honestly, like I went into Force Awakens with zero expectations of it being good. And like for me, the bar was like on the floor. And like, so literally like they got through the opening crawl and it was like good and like followable and had a point and introduced characters and plot. And I was like, okay, this is already better than the prequels. It's fine.
The opening crawl was better than all three prequels.
Than the entire movies, yes. Just the opening crawl.
It was better than the opening crawls and the prequels.
War!
Yes. Yes.
There are heroes on both sides, Kate.
God fucking damn it. Anyway. Oh my god.
But anyway.
You mean, should we name this episode White Cis Men Overreacting to The Last Jedi?
I mean, we haven't even gotten to that yet, but sure.
Well, like you did say, being dramatic.
Oh, okay, fair.
And overreacting already.
Yes, that's so fair.
I don't mean to overreact, but none of the other white Star Wars men fans that I know did that at all about this movie.
Oh, no.
Mm-mm.
Not at all.
Oh, also, there's dinner noises. Quinn is here. Oh, that's fine. Work.
Also, just to quickly finish my point, just so people don't get the wrong idea. After the throne room scene, and particularly the battle with the Praetorian Guard, I absolutely loved the movie. I literally came out of the movie with Kate and I was like, I don't even know how to feel right now. My mind is so blown from what that movie did. And then I saw it again. And because like I knew by the next day that I was like, I know this movie was amazing. I know I will love it. I just need to like get my head around what my expectations were. And I saw it again. And it's, I really hate ranking the Star Wars movies because on any given day, any of them can be my favorite. But this is, it's up there for me. It's really, 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 really up there. It was, I loved it. Just, I didn't want to get people to get the impression that like I hated it because no.
Right. No, he didn't hate it. I think that was my, that might be my favorite fight scene in any of the Star Wars.
Oh, so good.
Which is so funny.
Really good.
It didn't, I mean, like, it was a huge part of the movie, I think, thematically, but it wasn't a huge part of the movie as far as, like, time mm-hmm. or, like, there wasn't enough, and there weren't a lot of other battle scenes in the movie. So it's interesting that it, like, obviously it was meant to stand out. I mean, especially with, like, the colors that they decided to, you know, ended up using.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know if somebody who's more versed in that wants to talk about that. That's not me, but.
We need
But at, I just thought it was fucking. Fucking awesome. But I mean, I think that's definitely, I think I had somewhat similar feelings to Chris. I was worried I was not gonna like it during kind of like the beginning, or like up until, I don't know where that the throne room scene stands chronologically in the movie even.
It's at like
as far as like
it's at like 2 out of 3 hours. It's about there.
Okay.
It's like 2/3 of the way through the movie.
Okay. Yeah, so, you know, a little bit more than halfway. Because there is, I mean, like, and when I, just to clarify, when I said, like, it was comparable to Rogue One, I just meant that, like, I had no idea what the fuck was going on the first time I watched it. Like, it was hard for me to follow because I had so, I mean, it wasn't hard for me to follow. I think it was a pretty easy movie to follow, especially if you're comparing it directly to Rogue One. But I just think that there's so much going on, so many kind of different storylines going on, and just unfamiliar Star Wars stuff, that that's kind of what your mind was, like, preoccupied by. And I think that was, I got that kind of same vibe, like, the very first time I saw Rogue One, I was like, this is not a Star Wars movie, what is going on?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know,
even though it is.
Yeah, totally. Super dense with world and plot and character building. I just want to say that, as you both know, and our listeners probably know by now, I am a contrary little shit. So I walked out of that first viewing and I was like, I fucking love that movie. And what I said to Chris immediately after the first viewing was that once this all settles and, you know, people have had time to calm the fuck down, because I mean, the reason why we didn't put this episode or do this episode earlier is because this, a lot of people who we follow in the hardcore fandom are just kind of batting this around and nitpicking at it at this point. But I really think that this movie is going to age like fine wine, and it's going to be considered the best Star Wars movie of all time, supposing that 9 it does well in terms of its story making and how it ties up the all the loose ends for all the characters. I think this movie's going to be better than Empire because of what it does. Is it just, like you guys were saying, it's Star Wars, obviously, but it doesn't feel like Star Wars. It completely blows up all of our expectations of what a Star Wars movie is, how we, you know, the futures we imagine for these characters, especially because we had, before they all got in canon, this whole extended universe where people were imagining what all was happening with, like, the older characters and, you know, that's accepting, like, you know, fan fiction, whatever. And I think that really upset people, but I think that was really important because it's a new era and we're finally kind of acknowledging that. Like, The Force Awakens obviously was to get more people to buy back into Star Wars after the unmitigated disaster of the prequels, and Rogue One was their first foray into kind of experimenting with a different kind of Star Wars movie, and they decided it was time, and I think they were absolutely right about that choice, and also to say nothing of the way that it just blows up the mythology. We're gonna talk so much about the forest guys, like, oh my god.
Yeah, and one thing that I just want to add to that is a conversation that I had both with you, Kate, coming out of the movie, and also I think the night of with at ShannonJoy26 on Twitter, was I completely understand coming out of this movie why, even before it had been released and a single person outside Lucasfilm had seen it, why the story group and Kathleen Kennedy gave Rian Johnson the keys to the kingdom, mm-hmm. sight unseen, on this movie. Because it is that important in how it moves the Star Wars universe forward. It is that important on how it sets up threads to continue the Star Wars universe after the Skywalker saga ends, or before it begins, depending on where Rian Johnson chooses to go with it. But it absolutely made sense to me why that choice was made going in. Also, Mike, just to respond to Keeks' point about if the throne room scene was her favorite fight scene, I don't know if that scene was my favorite fight scene. I do think that, taken on the whole, the combat in this movie was my favorite of any Star Wars movie.
Yes.
Because I love Anakin and Obi-Wan's duel on Mustafar, and I love Luke and Vader's duel in Cloud
City.
Does
that really count as a fight scene? I guess it does.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Oh, come on. That scene is like 10 minutes long.
It counts, though.
I know.
So it's hard for me to say scene to scene, but I think, taken on a whole, the throne room, the initial space combat, the battle over Dakar, even the First Order ambush of the Raddus, when the bridge is blown up, when the bridge and the hangar are blown up, and the battle on Crait, I was so stressed out. I was so stressed out watching the battle of Crait and Luke facing Kylo Ren, and it was perfect in its simplicity, I thought. And so, taken as a whole, I do think that the combat in this movie was the best combat of any, for me personally, my favorite combat in any Star Wars movie.
Yeah, cool. Can I bring up, sorry.
That's great, that's, Chris.
I didn't mean it like that.
I'm gonna
put
it on the fridge so you can look at it every day. Sorry.
Great. Can I bring up a point that's not on the outline? I'm going to.
yes,
I think,
obviously.
Well, and this is just building on what kind of what Kate was saying. I mean, Kate thinks it's the best Star Wars movie, going to be the best, is or is going to be the best Star Wars movie of all time, which I think is awesome. But I kind of want to bring it back to, like, why I think Kate probably liked this movie so much, and why I like this movie so much, and why Chris liked this movie so much, without kind of speaking for them. But I have a feeling you guys probably feel somewhat similarly. Part of why I like this movie so much is because it gave me so much of Star Wars that I was getting in the non-screen media, or even just the non-movie media. We're getting weird force shit. We're getting just kind of like room for the characters to breathe, and room for concepts to breathe that we wouldn't necessarily have gotten in like a traditional Star Wars movie. So there's a lot more kind of up in the air, and you know, it raises a lot of questions and debates, and you know, that's like why we have the podcast, right? It's so that we can read Star Wars books and say, how does this fit into the greater canon? And I think The Last Jedi just really expanded the canon in a huge, huge way.
Yes, I totally, totally agree with that. And absolutely. You know that I absolutely love weird force shit, and I was so, so into the weird force shit in this movie. And like you were saying, you know, in a traditional Star Wars movie, where would we have gotten settings like Canto Bight, you know, that never would have happened, or the feeling of, you know, it being kind of a heist caper while we were on that, blah, 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 in the casino. You know, those are usually only, like, tones and settings that the non-film media would play around with. Also, I just want to say, I've seen a lot of people kicking around, well, I don't understand why X, Y, or Z was in this movie because it didn't do anything. Guys, I would highly suggest that people watch this movie multiple times, because at first, you know, for certain pieces of this film, I thought the same thing. And then after sitting and percolating on it for a while, it's becoming clear to me that although the plot is huge and it's sprawling and it focuses on all these different characters, everything isn't in exactly the right place. It's amazing how much, like, the lack of fat that is on this movie, despite the fact that it's 3 fucking hours, is incredible to me.
And just one other thing on, like, why we're so-and-so in this movie. Because, I mean, I feel like we're all thinking of it, so let's, like, say it. Like, why was Benicio del Toro in this movie? Like, that's one, like, people were very disappointed with DJ's character, which I don't really think I share, to be honest. I actually thought that DJ fulfilled his role, but I do get why people wanted more out of him. One thing that I'll say is to remember that this is movie number 2 of a trilogy.
Yes.
And we have no idea if DJ is going to be back in episode 9, whatever it is titled, when J.J. Abrams makes it. We have no idea what his role might be. I mean, if you look back at just Empire, like, what the hell was Yoda's role? What the hell was Lando's? Lando had a little bit more of closure by the end of the movie. But there are plenty of characters who, at least for me as a young person, I took the original Star Wars trilogy as a whole. And that made the characters' arcs make sense. If I'd taken the characters' arcs after 2 movies, like, cool, we're never going to see Han again.
Right.
Like,
I mean,
cool. What's Luke got his hand cut off and is broken. That's a fun story. So glad I invested 2 movies rooting for him.
I mean, we have to remember that it's literally called a saga. Like, you don't read, like, 3 random books out of the Odyssey and go, this is a shitty story. Like, what's going on? No, you read the whole thing.
And it's, and I do think that's important to remember, because in a lot of ways, and I said this coming out of the movie, this almost felt like Empire, or like, excuse me, not like Empire, like Return of the Jedi. And that's what was surprising about it. Like, there was a lot of finality in this movie. Like, the seeds of the rebellion escaped. We have no idea where they're going. But honestly, it doesn't really matter. Like, there is no cliffhanger in this movie. And so it felt like the end of a saga. I mean, we even had the very final scene with Broom Boy. Like, the dawn of the new Force users.
Broom Boy.
Hashtag Broom Boy.
And so, like, I get why people... It feels like the end of a story in a lot of ways. And I think that the important thing to remember is that it's not the end of a story, and that there's still so much more to go, and we're going to find out so much more. And to not... If you're disappointed about DJ's role, or why Benicio del Toro was in this movie, or even, like, if you're disappointed, like, want to know more about Snoke. I want to know more about Snoke, but I'm glad Rian Johnson killed him. I thought that was brilliant. Like,
there's
a lot more to this
Snoke
story that we're going to find out.
I want 50 Snoke books.
Right?
That's not what this is about, but...
I'm still sticking to my theory that he is from the Unknown Regions.
Okay, we all need to stop talking over each other. This is very fucking annoying.
Sorry.
Okay. Just jumping off your point, Mr. I like to hear myself talk because I'm a white man. One of the things I want to say is that in addition to completely blowing up our expectations of what a Star Wars movie is supposed to be, The Last Jedi also kind of exploded our expectations of what storytelling is supposed to be. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bad story or that it's a bad writing. Because I've gotten into several heated disagreements with people IRL. Joe from work, if you're listening to this, it's totally you. about how, you know, and they thought that this was lazy writing or was incomplete writing because, you know, again, they didn't tell us about Snoke or, oh my God, where was I going with this? You know, basically that all the things they expected to happen weren't the things that happened. Like, the beats that they expected to come weren't the ones that came at the times they expected them to. I'm trying to be eloquent about this, but Chris is picking lint off the microphone, and it's very fucking distracting.
Sorry. Sorry, I was gonna say, Kate, can you expand on that? I don't know that I quite know what you're talking about, but I blame Chris.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm done.
Oh my god. Okay, so, and I'll post a link to this when we post the episode, but I was reading a really interesting post, and I think it was on Rebel Girl, but I might be wrong about that, so if I'm wrong, throw rocks at me, I guess. But it was basically talking about something that we've been talking about a lot on the pod, which is the hero's journey, Joseph Campbell's theory of Western storytelling. You expect things to happen to the hero in a certain order. So, you know, for example, in a lot of our most famous stories, the hero is, you know, he's called into a world that he never expected to be a part of, and he's receives this mission and he has to fulfill it and all that kind of thing. You can see it, I think I've said this before, but you can see it very clearly in pretty much all of the Star Wars movies. You can see it in Harry Potter, you can see it in fairy tales, all that sort of thing. And then hand in hand with that is this three-act structure that we expect stories to take. So, you know, there's inciting action, and then in the middle, the problem is complicated, and at the end there's some kind of resolution. And the point that the author of this post was making is that The Last Jedi doesn't follow any of that, because it actually has a fourth act, and that's kind of why it feels weird to a lot of people, maybe. And in describing that, what they're saying is that by the end of before they even get to Crait, the heroes have mostly, you know, they've learned their lessons, they've resolved a lot of things. You know, Rey has decided that she is never going to go to the dark side, she leaves Kylo. Finn has learned that the war is bigger than himself and bigger than the interpersonal problems or relationships that he has with Rey or anyone else in the Resistance. Poe has learned what real leadership is, and all that hour-long action on Crait does is it solidifies the lessons that they've learned. You know, Rey continues to reject the dark side. At the end, she literally closes the door on Kylo. Finn tries to sacrifice himself because he believes in this larger cause now, and Poe shows that he knows what real leadership looks like, you know, leading more quietly than he did before. And so so the point that this person was making was, like, there's this weird extra bit that we have there, and obviously it's great and I love it, but I feel like the reason why this movie feels overlong to some people and the plot feels so heavy is because we have extra shit hanging on at the end there, as it were.
Totally agree with you, Kate, and if I could build on that, I think, and kind of, I don't know, it's not building on it directly, but just kind of to build a side of that while also using that as a foundation. Let me stretch this metaphor. But it's interesting because the whole time you're saying that, the questions that come up in my mind and the questions that have been coming up for me as we're hearing so many, I mean, they even came up as Rogue One came out and Force Awakens came out, and you know, we're in the Star Wars fandom, right? So we get all kinds of reactions to things. We get people who love stuff. We get people who hate stuff. You know, there are people who fucking love the prequels who will die saying that the prequels are good movies, right? So, you know, it takes all kinds. But what it brings up for me is, you know, this essential question of, like, one, what makes something a Star Wars movie, right? Like, what defines something as Star Wars? And two, what makes something a good Star Wars movie, you know, even though that's not, like, an objective thing. But it's interesting because it's like, you know, what then would these folks have wanted? Would they have wanted some sort of, like, reboot of Empire? Or would it, you know, obviously, I just think it's interesting. This fandom has such range and depth and smartness and stupidity that, you know, I'm serious. It really does, right? You know, there's obviously nothing that they could have done that would have made everybody happy. There never is. But I think part of what made this movie so interesting and noteworthy is all of the different storylines going through it in a way that I don't think has been done as successfully before. I mean, we had a lot of storylines going in the prequels in, like, not a great way, in a really confusing way, where, like, it's the same timeline, but there are different, you know, tendrils of story that are not really, you know, being folded together very effectively. Whereas when we look at the original trilogy, we have, you know, obviously in Empire, we have Han and Leia on the Falcon, and then we have Luke, and then they eventually converge at the end. But here we have, like, what, four different storylines going on that then converge at the end?
Maybe even more, honestly.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it was done in a way that was not at all unclear. And I thought it was done in a way that was really effective, but I also thought it was done in a way that was very unique in its effectiveness and its clearness, you know?
Totally. Do we want to talk about that for a second a little bit? What makes a Star Wars movie feel like a Star Wars movie? Because we keep saying that, like, it didn't really feel like a Star Wars movie. Like, what does that mean when we say that? I think I know what I mean
for
when
me,
I...
it was more stressful. Honestly, like, I'm serious about that. Like, for me, like, it felt like the stakes were a lot heavier. Like, uh-huh. It felt from the jump, particularly from the scene on the bridge where it appears that Leia has been killed. It feels like no one is safe. And mm-hmm. that's not a feeling that we've ever felt in a Star Wars movie before. Like, in the original trilogy, it would have been rightfully unheard of for any of the big three to die. Like, maybe people in 1981 thought Luke was going to die. That's possible. But he's still the star of the franchise. So I don't really think that's going to happen. Like, in the prequels, we know exactly who's going to die and who's not going to die, for the most part. And in Force Awakens, you know from the way they're setting it up that Finn and Rey and Poe are going to be fine. And you can kind of see it, read the writing on the wall for Han. And it just feels like no one is safe in this movie. And so to me, that was refreshing, because it didn't feel like we were on, like, it didn't feel like we were on training wheels anymore, which, like, and I say that lovingly, because I love kind of the campy space opera-ness of Star Wars, where you do have this hero's journey, and you do have, you know, the stakes are only so big because you know the good guys are going to win in the end. And I love that aspect of it, but I felt like this was a darker movie in many ways, even than Rogue One.
Right. You kind of, like, touched on a lot of things that I think are part of my answer to what makes a Star Wars movie. I think, obviously, we're basing most of our models of what that looks like on the original trilogy. And what characterized the original trilogy for me is kind of the tone of it. It's obviously a space opera, and it's telling this story, and you're really invested in it, and you're invested in this world, but it never takes itself too seriously. And you know, you could see that in the characterization of Han, who's like, acts like he's slick, and then he's a giant fucking goober, like 3PO being the most annoying motherfucker on the planet. All of that. And then you get to the prequel trilogy, and the prequels have a plethora of cinematic and storytelling problems. But I think one of the problems is that it almost takes itself too seriously. Like, it takes itself so seriously to the point of being silly, you know? Like, you've got Anakin trying to be really moody and, like, you know, he's worried about all these horrible things, and, like, he literally slaughters an entire outpost of Tusken Raiders and stuff. But you laugh at it because it's ridiculous. Like, it's, like we've said in previous episodes, like, it's all fake and it's space, and, you know, the thing with the original trilogy is that they kind of know that it's all fake and in space on some level. Like, they kind of act like that, and in the prequels, they don't. And then what you were saying, Chris, about the darker tone that we're getting into with the sequel trilogy, it's really modern, and it's serious. It's serious, and it's winking like the original trilogy, but for me, it's covered over by this layer of grit, I guess, that, and I hate talking about things this way, but I have to, that wasn't present before 9/11, honestly. And it certainly wasn't present in the years before we had a Cheeto in the White House. And it's just, it's this, I don't know, it's the tonal shift, I think, for me, that's getting me. Words, yay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I totally agree with that, Kate. I mean, I think there, in a way, there's much more breadth just to, you know, it, I think, I'm having trouble articulating this, as usual. I think The Force Awakens, I mean, The Force Awakens, oh my god, what are we even talking about? I think The Last Jedi, in a way that not many other even films that I've seen lately, that are, you know, action adventure, kind of gets at, you know, we're laughing out loud in the theater, right? It, you know, in kind of the ways that we were laughing out loud when we saw the original trilogy, right? But it's also, I think it gets much, much darker than the original trilogy ever does, which is just building on what both Kate and Chris said. You know, nobody felt safe in this movie. And I think, you know, totally agreeing with what Kate says, and Chris, this is what I do on this podcast, is I agree with both of them. But I mean, I think that just drives home the point of the Jedi Order ending. I think that's what it is, right? There's no Luke to come to the rescue. There's no Han to come to the rescue. There's no Leia to come to the rescue. You know, this whole trilogy is supposed to be about this broken thing, and how we kind of make it through that, and our characters make it through that in a way that the original trilogy just wasn't.
That's brilliant. I love that. I guess I'm laughing to myself because what we're talking about with you know, no one is safe versus you kind of could expect who was going to die in both the original prequel trilogies. Now it's just like everyone's sitting around like taking like booking bets and speculating like, oh, Kanan and Ezra are going to die or Zeb's going to die or, you know, like it's hysterical. Sorry, I just had to say that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Kristen, really very much to your point is that this was kind of the most meta Star Wars movie that we've ever had, and I don't think people necessarily know how to handle it. Like, I feel like this was a recognition of the fact that this is a major franchise that makes a lot of money, but if they're not careful, it will get stale and they will run out of stories. Because if they just continue to build on the same characters, they will run out of stories. And the way to avert that eventuality is to let the past die, to use Kylo's terms.
Speaking of meta, you know, that line, let the past die, kill it if you have to, and Luke saying, this is not going to go the way you think. I see what you did there, guys.
Yeah, I mean, that the way that trailer was cut was just hilarious in hindsight. But
I know. Everybody go watch the trailers again. It's very funny.
Yeah. A bunch of fucking trolls over Lucasfilm. Good God.
Yeah. But no, it's incredibly meta, and it's a commentary not just on the characters of Star Wars, but on the future of the Star Wars franchise as a business itself, and the fact that we need to let go, and that we need to embrace the wider universe, or everything is going to fall apart. And if we don't, as fans, and if Lucasfilm doesn't, as creators, commit to the building of that wider universe, then what is even the point? And I think that that is something that, Kate, to your point, you think that this is going to be an incredibly popular movie when all is said and done. I agree. But I think that we need to get to that future of this wider Star Wars universe that we've obviously been talking about because it's the point of our podcast, but that many, I hate the term casual fan because it's gatekeepy as fuck, but many fans who are less deep in the fandom aren't as acquainted with. They haven't necessarily seen it, and I think when they do, we'll look back to this movie as the point where we radically jumped off of the trajectory, and it's going to be incredibly important.
And Chris, just to add to that, and you can do this, you can remedy your gatekeepiness by just sometimes calling those people kids, because this is also a franchise for kids.
And this movie, it's all for 10-year-olds.
Yeah, and this movie, honestly, this movie
was not for 10-year-olds.
No, this movie was not for 10-year-olds, but also it was.
Yes.
Like, funny faces, the milking scene with Ray discuss, like, that kids are fucking laughing at that.
General hugs.
Great. I mean, I was laughing.
General hugs. Yeah, that's the other thing that a lot of people forget, you know, it's that the sequel trilogy is for the next generation. You know, they're not going to cater to fan service constantly all the time. You know, they're not going to rehash the original trilogy. This sequel trilogy was never going to be about Han, Luke, and Leia by themselves. Yeah, no, this is, I mean, by all accounts, most people love this movie, but I, like you said, Keeks, I bet kids really fucking love this movie.
Yeah, and the strongest critiques that I've heard from older people, the strongest legitimate critiques that I've heard from people of older generations, well, I mean, legitimate because, as a quick tangent, there are people who did not like this movie for legitimate reasons. And I say legitimate not to gatekeep your reasons, but just to say that people who didn't like it because they don't like the fact that Rey, Finn, and Poe, and Rose are the stars, because of their identities, that is not legitimate. So that's the only reason I use that term.
Mm-hmm.
The people who did have legitimate reasons not to like this movie is because they wanted it to be more nostalgic. I have a couple coworkers who said explicitly they would have liked it to have been more like Empire. They would have liked it. They would have liked to see Luke, to use Luke's terms, come in and face down the whole First Order with a laser sword. That's what they wanted. And I get that. I respect that. That's what a lot of people grew up with. They grew up idolizing Luke Skywalker. And that's what they wanted out of the sequel trilogy. And I respect that. And if you didn't like this movie because it didn't give you that, I can't fault you for that.
Did they not watch the movie, though, because he did that?
Well, yeah. Different discussion. But I will say,
I'm like, there's a whole scene about that, Chris.
Right. But I will say that I think it was a conscious choice to make this movie not that and move it in a direction that is more sustainable for the future. And I feel like many of our listeners did like the movie. If you didn't like it, particularly if you didn't like it for that reason, I urge you to go back into it with a different frame of mind, and with the frame of mind of building on the Star Wars universe rather than bringing stories to a close.
Right. The other thing I want to add is that I'm really enjoying how Lucasfilm is finally starting to make conscious choices to also blow up our expectations of Hollywood. You know, they cast John Boyega as Finn, Oscar Isaac as a Latino man, and Kelly Marie Tran, of course, my girl. I love her so much. And also, this is like backpedaling way far, but it makes me laugh at the people who were mad that Benicio del Toro and Laura Dern didn't have bigger roles. No one ever said they were actually important. They just said they were going to be in the movie. Like, they cast these actors who, sure, are big names because they were right for the characters, not because they were big names. Like, this is not how Star Wars works, and it's never been how Star Wars worked. And so, just, guys, just because you think they should have top billing doesn't mean they need the top billing.
All right, and we've run pretty long, and we have, like, really not even gotten to any of the more analysis-y parts of our outline, which, Kristen, did you read? I don't think you read.
I don't know, because she migrated all the shit from an older document to this one.
Oh, shit, maybe she did read it.
I didn't read it.
Oh, well. Anyway, point is, we have a lot more that we want to talk about, and so rather than inflicting that on everybody now, I think we want to wrap up with just some rapid fire, just general thoughts on specifically what did we like and what did we not like about the movie. And it doesn't need to be super rapid fire, like, feel free to delve into it. But I feel like that's a good place to stop here, and then we'll get to the more analysis. What does this mean for the books and the general canon universe in a future wrap-up episode? Does that sound good?
You mean the actual point of the podcast, Chris?
Ooh.
Maybe.
Imagine that.
Kristen, you go first.
As always, I'm going to be unorthodox in my reactions, but probably so far my favorite part of the movie is Mark Hamill on Twitter after the movie.
Yes.
Owning the shit out of people.
Oh, God, I love him.
Also, Frank Oz, like, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Frank Oz has been ripping people new assholes, and I'm so happy.
Yeah, Mark Hamill's like, no, I didn't eat porgs, only fish. And also, Luke is gay if you want him to be gay. Just like, all of it rolled into one. It's just so important. Although I think he said that probably before, but it's like reemerged on my Tumblr. So it's fresh in my mind. But I mean, I've loved how the cast has just done cast things. But most especially Mark. But yeah, I mean, I think some of my favorite parts of the movie, I think, were like the minor characters and the humor that a lot of people didn't like the caretakers on the Jedi Island were like my favorite people. They're just like happy / cranky, like just little beings that are just the most wonderful / most annoyed. They just made me laugh so much. I want to know everything about them.
Like, you know how the caretakers, that expression they have on their face every time they look at Rey? That's how I feel about life.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It's true. Any aspects that you didn't, that you would have liked for them to do better?
Not really. I think that's a better question for me to ask me after I see it the second time, because I think most things that I probably didn't like, it's just because I kind of was missing them. But there was nothing that really struck me, you know, rubbed me the wrong way, except for what I talked about earlier, which was like the whole first half of the movie when I saw it the first time. But I think that was all flipped upside down by the second half of the movie, honestly. I mean, I think it was it laid exactly what it should have foundation wise for the second half.
Yeah, totally. Kate?
All right. So first of all, I have to say, Rose Tico is my hero. I think KMT did an incredible job, especially being a newcomer in the middle of the sequel trilogy and a newcomer to this humongous franchise. And we all know and have probably read interviews with some of the other younger members of the cast about, you know, it's a lot of fun, but it's also this huge responsibility. And it comes with it a lot of, I don't want to say burdens, but, you know, fame brings its own problems, that sort of thing. And I think she's been handling it with grace and aplomb, and she's also been so wonderful and generous in using her platform to boost other Asian American and just straight up Asian artists to all of the premieres. She wore dresses by Vietnamese designers, that kind of thing. Like, she's just been incredible. Favorite scenes, I'm going to go for it. Definitely the throne room fight scene, because just cinematically incredible, so well choreographed. And just watching that scene will remind you that Adam Driver used to be a Marine and could wreck you. He will actually destroy you. Chris is like nodding and like giving me this look of pure fear. Yeah, Adam Driver could rip your arms off.
Who wins in a fight, real life Adam Driver or Chewie?
Oh, shit. I'm not answering that.
That's not the podcast for this. That's a special Adam Driver versus Chewie podcast.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, we would need to examine all the evidence. It's true.
Oh, my God. We would need to get, like, at Southern Cynic on here to, like, debate with us, because that would be the best.
This actually sounds great. We may have to do this.
All right, guys. If you want it to happen, like, give us a holler, because not to speak for her, but she would totally do it. Other favorite scenes. Crait, obviously, visually spectacular. It's kind of the opposite of the throne scene, where it's, like, overwhelmed with red versus pops of red. It's just, like, so cool. I have to mention that scene where Haldo goes at light speed through Snoke's ship, because that was fucking baller. And I cried like, and I cried like ugly sobbing disgustingly 4 times when I first watched this movie, and it was like every scene with Carrie Fisher in it and the ending where they had the dedication to her, and I was just like, I can't with my feelings. And then I think after, you know, sitting on this movie and digesting it for all these weeks, I think the only thing I think I don't like is how underused I felt Phasma was, especially after all the buildup for her fight with Finn. And I will say that if she comes back in 9 and has a bigger role, then it'll be fine. But if she doesn't, then I'm real pissed.
Yeah, I'll jump off there because for me, the one thing that really jumps out to me at this movie that I did not like is the usage of Phasma. Again, to take my own advice for how people are feeling about DJ and Benicio del Toro's role, I am trying to hold my powder, so to speak, to see if Phasma survives. Because she could. She survived being a trash compactor in TFA. So it's... I hope that Phasma did survive and we get to not learn more about her, because obviously we learn more about her in Phasma, which we'll be reading soon, the novel by Delilah S. Dawson. But I want more of her in the films. And if we don't get her, then I agree. I think that's a big wasted opportunity. One part that I loved and also admit didn't hit 100% is Canto Bight. I know that a lot of people just really didn't like the Canto Bight interlude. I actually really loved it because I thought that it was really daring and really interesting, and Star Wars trying to impart a more explicit social message for really the first time in a really long time. And so I really loved that aspect of it and thought that it was incredibly bold. I also recognize that to do something like that, it needs to hit 100%. And I do think that there were a couple aspects of it that didn't necessarily do that. And that makes it like it's one of those things where there's not a lot of room for error. So I get why people didn't like those scenes. I personally really did, but I see what you're all saying. Specific things I liked. Oh my God, Kylo Ren.
Oh, yeah. Can we talk about what incredible fucking job Adam Driver did in this movie?
As someone who, and I think I've mentioned it on the pod before, my favorite Star Wars character, you know, pre-Last Jedi is Darth Vader. I consider the Skywalker saga to be the rise and fall of Anakin Skywalker, a tragedy in 9 acts. Kylo Ren blew away any expectation I could have for how I could feel about a villain in a post-Vader world. And I liked him in TFA, but there was no comparison.
Oh, I forgot to add one more thing I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
The scene with Yoda and Luke generally, but especially the fact that Yoda is still crazy Dagobah Yoda, and he's just a giant fucking troll, calls down some lightning and blows up a tree.
Yeah, oh, we're going to talk a lot more about that next episode. Trust me. We're going to talk a lot more about that in our reflections episode.
Yes. I obviously have a lot more to say, but I've only seen it once, and I think I'll have to take notes next time.
Definitely. Uh-huh. I loved Luke's arc. I know people didn't, and I respect that it is hard to see your childhood hero fail. There's no two ways about it. Luke failed in this movie and in his life. And he redeemed himself, but he failed. But to me, it makes him so much more human. And frankly, it is so relatable to see Luke in this deep depression spiral.
Right.
That we see him in.
And also kind of refreshing, especially in this age we live in where we're really trying to analyze rampant toxic masculinity, especially among privileged white men. I thought that was such a good character to be seeing on screen, you know, to see your hero not be perfect. even after he's attained like the heights of power or whatever.
Yeah, and we'll probably talk more next episode about how I felt like there was a lot in this movie about disability as well. But Luke, I think Luke's mental health situation is a good example of that. DJ Stutter, really underrated aspect of that.
Yes.
And last thing, I liked everything about this movie, so I could go on for hours. Last thing, and then we'll wrap up, is that there has been debate on Twitter, even among the more woke aspects of the fandom, about toxic masculinity in this movie, which I really don't want to go into here because I don't want any part of one specific aspect of that debate.
We're not stepping into a wasp nest, like, ever.
But I loved that toxic masculinity was explicitly an aspect of this movie that was the villain. Like, the villain of this movie was toxic masculinity in every way. And I think it was pulled off with grace. I think it was pulled off in a way that beat you over the head with it, in a way that was perfect and didn't feel forced, and just really made every viewer hopefully think about what our movies do and what our lives do. Mm-hmm. So I just loved that.
Totally.
All right. Any last thoughts, or I'll wrap us up?
Go ahead, Chris. Wrap us
up. All right. Well, we got through none of our planned discussion topics, but that's okay because this movie was great, and Kate, we're gonna see it again this weekend.
Also, guess what, we have our own fucking podcast and we can do whatever we want.
Damn. Aww. Right, we can,
motherfuckers.
We are the Ryan Johnsons of the Book Wars pod.
Do wow. whatever we want. That was weird. Okay.
Yeah.
Do whatever sure. we want. Just throw George Lucas's dreams on the ground. I'm kidding.
You're not kidding.
Throw them on the ground.
Yeah, because it's so stupid. Like this, never mind. Anyway, thank you for listening to this special mini episode reacting to The Last Jedi of the Book Wars pod. Please hit us up on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play. Rate, review, subscribe to the podcast. Tell your friends. Tell your coworkers. Talk to us on Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, email. Book Wars Pod on all those platforms, bookwarspod@gmail.com. Our theme song is Whiz Bang by Poddington Bear. Our logo and artwork are by Joe Butera Design, although we're considering revoking his credit based on his reactions to The Last Jedi.
We're totally kidding. We love Joe.
We're mostly kidding.
Oh my about God. That.
Chris. Thank you for Kate and Kristen. I am Chris. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast, for continuing to go on this epic Star Wars journey with us. And we'll talk to you, I don't know, not next week, because this is a mini episode. We'll talk to you when we talk to you.
Woo. Woo. Chris, you want me to do any of that again? I'm not sure how quiet any of that was.
No, it was listenable. It just
okay.
would be better.
Unlistenable and unenthusiastic.
And boring.